Throughout the summer, we have been talking about the power of gratitude. And today's insight is perhaps one of the most important. As we think about the relationship between gratitude and happiness. While both are related to each other, they are not exactly the same things. Happiness is often the results of things going well in your life, or at least up to your expectations or according to your satisfaction. So for obvious reasons, you might feel grateful when things are going well, and you would feel thankful. Or perhaps you should feel thankful. I'm not saying you have to feel a certain way. But as demonstrated last week, there are ways to be grateful and practice the habits of gratitude when things are not going well or when you're struggling. Practicing gratitude can help reframe your experience and provide a deeper foundation for your life. In short, you can't always be happy. You'll experience highs and lows in life's normal ebbs and flows, but you can always be grateful. So being happy by searching only for happiness is like depending upon your drinking water by waiting for it to rain. Sometimes there'll be plenty of water and you'll not be thirsty at all, but it's a feast or famine experience. Sometimes if your drinking water was whether or not the weather is going to be kind to you, well, there'll be many days where you will go with parched lips and dry throats without any refreshment at all. But a happiness that's rooted in gratitude is like digging and having a deep well, that when you need it most, it provides for you a steady source of quality water, a source of hope and confidence for your overall well-being throughout all of life. And developing this skill set is more vital than ever on how to cultivate the practice and habit of gratitude into our daily experiences. For more and more and more folks are feeling stressed and distressed about the growing amount of hatred and violence and discrimination we see all around us. And even I must admit to a product of some naivete. I mean, I knew there were pockets of hostility around the country, but I find myself shocked at how bountiful these massive wardrobes of ignorance and hatred unashamedly flaunt themselves onto every airway, every tweet storm, every Facebook post, every street corner, every place we turn. Comedian Bill Murray said, 50 years ago, we had Johnny Cash, Bob Hope, Steve Jobs. Now we have no cash, no hope, no jobs. So please, everyone, let's keep a careful eye on Kevin Bacon. Times are difficult, and they seem to get more and more challenging day after day. And I think we're all suffering from bad news overload. The outrage du jour is just too much. We crave escape, and we may just want to give up altogether. There's a phenomenon in the healthcare profession called compassion fatigue. Technically, secondary traumatic stress, or STS. In the simplest of terms, it means it hurts to care. And if you're around enough human suffering or tragedy, it can be overwhelming and detrimental to your overall health, a true job hazard to all people in the helping professions and those who are around them. All around us, there are more needs than committed resources, more suffering than dedicated relief, more apathy than direct action, more sorrows than those willing to help bear the load. I can feel like it's just too much. And we are getting trapped into thinking there's really nothing I can do about any of it. Our gospel reading today from Mark chapter 5 at the end of that chapter is a bonus. Two stories wedged together on top of each other in a fast-paced and hurried direction that we discover in Mark. If you've not done this before, perhaps even this afternoon, you could take the second gospel in our record, but the first that we have as a written record, the Gospel of Mark, and read the first three chapters, and then in your mind or even with a pencil, underline or check mark every time you see the word immediately. Immediately, 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 immediately. And there's also a few Easter eggs in there because the Greek word is there that is translated immediately more often than the English word immediately. Jesus is rushing about getting this thing done, getting this ministry launched, and being about taking care of people's needs. And here we are in chapter 5, Jesus rushing to be at the bedside of a sick and dying little girl, the daughter of an important community leader. But at this point in his ministry, he can't travel far without the public overwhelming him with all of their needs. Perhaps he was taking that boat ride across the Sea of Galilee so often just so he could have safe passage from one point to the next. The crowds pressing constantly upon Jesus. And on along the way, this important errand of which he was involved, there's a woman with a 12-year-long condition of an uncontrollable hemorrhage, which many suggest was a terrible condition of menstrual bleeding, causing her extraordinary pain and making her a total outcast from her community, increasing her isolation and her suffering. She's tried the traditional routes of healing, but all to no avail. And she was a part of this large crowd, pressing, pressing, pressing in upon Jesus. And she thought, if I could just get close enough, just to get somewhere in his peripheral vision, just close enough to get a hand upon him, or even just even a finger upon him. And she planned, and she pressed, and she pleaded. She pushed, she persisted, and she perhaps got one finger out from the crowd and pressed through. And in the dramatic telling of the Gospel of Luke, she got just a hem, a fringe of Jesus' garment, helping us think about how she had to stoop so low to get just a little bit of help, seeking someone to care for her and to help her in her immense pain and to welcome her in her incredible isolation and to help her in her incredible need. All she got was a crumb of gluten-free bread. But it was enough. And immediately, verse 29, she was healed. And immediately, verse 30, Jesus is aware of her for the first time. And the miracle that takes place even beyond his quick recognition. It's an incredible story. One that begs us to linger upon it. But there's a worried family and a dying child, a 12-year-old. Needing help. And wouldn't you know it? By the time Jesus can get to her bedside, she is no longer alive. The curtain has fallen. The moment has passed. Or so we're led to believe. But as often the case in the surprising grace of God revealed by the incarnation of love we find in Jesus, what seems impossible to us is not a problem for the divine. Listen, miracles are never issues of capacity or ability. They are always issues of timing. There is not one prayer that you have ever prayed for someone to be healed that has gone unanswered, whether in this life or in the next. That God's timing is to bring all things to completion and all things into goodness, and God's will not be thwarted. It can be delayed. It can be pushed back. It can be frustrating. But it will not ultimately fail. Couched in the human time frame of 12 years. 12 years. Sits the intervention of God. Jesus clears the distractions away, allows only His most trusted disciples to come with Him, and in the finality of death, He commands it to retreat, to be vanquished, to be gone. And the girl wakes up and is now okay. And the laughter has been turned to tears of gratitude. How like this gospel we live. The scorn, the laughter of the crowds. There's no God. God doesn't care. The sun is set on your movement. Christianity's in decline. You have nothing to offer. It's all hopeless. It's all worthless. It's time to pack up your bags, go home. There's nothing you can do. Have you been prey to that line of logic? Perhaps we need to hear the call of Christ, calling us between patience and persistence, responding to the needs and moving on, doing what we can do and realizing we can't do it all. Knowing it's going to hurt to care, but that's okay, because it hurts even more if we don't care. Yesterday at Pride, we stood with people who have persisted through long periods of either passive indifference or active persecution. For too often, and still in many cases, our gay, lesbian, bi, trans, queer folks have suffered in silence, judged by their church as immoral, rejected by their parents as disinherited, bullied and persecuted by their peers, shunned by their society, and in the very worst of all cases, attacked, brutalized, and murdered as victims. One of the first places I remember a very feeble attempt of personal support many, many years ago in another church that I offered was when I was being pressured by a deacon to, as he said, what I needed to do, to preach against the homosexuals. You're always in danger when people start talking about the homosexuals. I said I wouldn't do it, that they had received enough hate, and I wouldn't be another voice to even add one tiny brick to the load they carry. He wasn't happy. But to be honest with you, I wasn't happy either. Because even if I wouldn't preach against them, I was still being silent of truly standing up for them. And our silence is deadly. Suicide is the second leading cause of death among young people ages 10 to 24. One out of every six students from 9th to 12th grade, one in six, has seriously considered suicide in the past year. LGBTQ youth are 5 times more likely to attempt suicide, and if their family rejects them, the numbers jump up to 8.5 times more likely to make an attempt, to have an attempt that needs to have medical attention, or sadly, most of all, to be successful, if that's the right word, and ending their life. Anti-LGBTQ groups and hate crimes have continued to soar. We know because of the increased volume of calls to the anti-violence hotline, receiving a 34% surge from 2016 to 2017 in reported incidents. Suffering in silence. Wondering who cares. I like a poster I saw. Had the rainbow colors beneath it with the letters in front. Instead of the word discriminate, two words at the top, disarm. And the second word, hate. Disarm hate. And how do we stand up for everyone when so many are under attack, who feel abandoned or neglected or abused or forgotten? How do we do this on this not-so-merry-go-round of competing outrages where you feel you're bleeding to get death from a thousand cuts? Can we endure the hurt necessary for us to care? Some are choosing avoidance. I just won't look. Some escapism. Well, I'll try and enjoy as much of my life as I can. And then there's the narrow path of salvation, of grateful and graceful patience and advocacy and kindness. I'll do what I can, for whom I can, wherever I can, knowing I can't do it all, but I still need to do my small part. Theologian Jürgen Bultmann says, if God is incapable of suffering, then God is incapable of love. We don't want to suffer. But how can we truly love unless we join with those who most need us? That's what I love about you, Central Baptist Church. You have the courage to love, but you know there's a cost. So therefore, you are willing to accept the courage to suffer along the way. It's all part of the same process. We bear the weight because the love we bear is love. We don't bear this pain alone. We don't look upon this hate in isolation. For how are we going to really do this work? Only by joining together in a faithful path of being refreshed by the God who teaches us how to love and fills us with the power of love. We lean on each other. We learn from each other. We get strength from each other. We are emboldened by each other. We are ready to do this job with each other. And then we come to this table. This invitation from God that before we run out and get too busy with all of our other agendas, we lay down our burden. We have a moment of respite. A moment where we will push the pause button on the anxiety and the worry that so overwhelms us. We will lay it here at the feet of Jesus' cross. We will seek to reach out and touch the hem of His garment, knowing that He calls us out of the sleepwalking of our death, and that we take this presence upon us as He says, take me with you. Walk with me and allow me to walk within you. Allow my presence to empower your living. Allow my love to be your love, so that when you offer to the world what is so necessary to give, it does not come from your own power. It does not reside in your own wisdom. It is not dependent upon your own strength. Take me with you and love with my love and trust your life with my timing. And we say thank you. Thank you. Thank you, God.